Welcome to this episode for Anabaptist Perspectives Partners. Marlon Summers is here, and I, Jaron Miller, am here, and we intend to respond to a question about the Eucharist. Somebody named One in Christ 15T left a comment on YouTube on Paul Amicella's episode called The Nation State of Israel and the Church. Here's what they said. Is it common practice for Anabaptists to have the Eucharist every Sunday?
So, not very common from what I can tell. We also don't hear the word Eucharist very much. The most common term is communion in our circles. So yeah, we want to wrap around, describe Anabaptist practice here a little bit in various ways related to communion. Might be helpful, especially for the sake of those of us who are less familiar with a term like Eucharist, just to think about some of these words that helped kind of round out our picture of, you know, what do we mean by the loaf and the cup? The word Eucharist comes from the Greek word for thanksgiving. And that shows up in several ways. One, as communion is, the Lord's Supper is described in the Gospels, there's this big emphasis. Jesus gave thanks, you know, Eucharisteo, gave thanks and passed around the bread. It's also used, 1 Corinthians 10, in some manuscripts, talk about as the cup of thanksgiving, or other manuscripts, the cup of blessing, which I think is a related idea, the cup of blessing which we bless. And so while Anabaptists don't use this term Eucharist as much, I think it's just a very good reminder of, yeah, Jesus coming with thanksgiving, us coming with thanksgiving. For everything given to us by God. It is also the Lord's Supper or the Lord's table, as we talk about it sometimes. Jesus, and I think that really emphasizes Jesus is the host. We're engaging with Jesus there because it's his supper. It is the blood of the covenant with Jesus. It can be called a remembrance because we are partaking, remembering Jesus, partaking of the body and blood, remembering his broken body and shed blood. And the term communion, which is a translation used in the King James and probably other translations for the word koinonia in 1 Corinthians 10, fellowship or participation. Yeah, there's something going on with Jesus there. That's just a bit of background. And then, yeah, let's dive into more of the Anabaptist mode of practice. Jaron, you had observations from one of the episodes we published from The Martyr's Mirror. Maybe we could start there.
Yeah, it's a passage from The Martyr's Mirror that I want to read. I think it's helpful in the sense that it will give a feel for the way that some Anabaptists in the 16th century thought about things very early on. Not necessarily the way we would talk about things today, but helpful context. So the story is the martyrdom of, I think it's Venkin. How would you say that, Marlon?
I don't know, but we have an episode that was a reading of this story
The
very early days of Anabaptist Perspectives.
Back in 2018, I think we published this. So the martyrdom of Venkin. On the 18th, the aforesaid Venkin was arraigned before the governor and the full council of Holland. There a woman asked her, "Have you well considered the things which my lords propose to you?" Question. "What do you hold concerning the sacrament?" Answer, I hold your sacrament to be bread and flour. And if you hold it as a god, I say it is your devil. Question, what do you hold concerning the holy oil? Answer, oil is good for salad or to oil your shoes with. So here, Vankin asks how she regards the sacrament, which I assume is a reference to the Eucharist. And she didn't really have any theology of it to offer. She clearly indicated that whatever position she held, it wasn't what the Catholics or Protestants or whoever was interrogating her had. Her perspective was different from theirs. So I bring this quotation up not because it's necessarily representative of what Anabaptists either then or now had to say about the Eucharist, but because it feels to me that in the 16th century and still today in many conversations that I've heard, we find it easier to say what we believe the sacraments or communion to not be than to articulate clearly what it is. Do you think that's fair, Marlon?
I mean, I think that's all too easy. And yes, can feel that way sometimes. I think the Anabaptist focus, and it has varied from thinker to thinker a lot. One of the things that's distinctive, or I should say unusual in Anabaptists, not unique to Anabaptists by any means, but a bit unusual, is the very strong emphasis on the gathered body, on communion with each other, not just with God and so on. And that has brought a strength to it that has been very helpful. One of the ways that plays out, and I think it's part of the reason that, contemporary Anabaptists often don't have communion as often, twice a year, three or four times a year, occasionally monthly, is this very strong sense of working hard to make sure that things are right in the brotherhood before sharing communion. And yes, they should always be right. But traditionally, there's been a lot of work leading up to communion to say, are there unresolved issues between brothers? And, in many cases, pushing off communion if there are unresolved issues. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the right response to push off communion. But the seriousness of that is good. And so that has led to things like the preparatory service, council meeting, which vary a lot from congregation to congregation, but a meeting beforehand where everybody's expected to testify, talk about their relationship to God and other people. The formula where it's often stated is, I have peace with God and man. And I understand why some people feel that that's trite. But to be able to affirm that in good conscience is tremendously significant. And so that is one piece that is going into an Anabaptist understanding of communion for a lot of our churches, is that hard work beforehand. Before celebrating communion. Jaron, I think you had some other pieces maybe you want to talk about, other things that tend to go with communion in Anabaptist circles that don't necessarily go with it in other traditions.
Yeah, that's definitely right. The testimony meeting in the churches I've been closest to have been just inextricably linked to a communion service, where either in the course of the communion service or in a meeting prior, we'll spend a lot of time just hearing from each other. I think I've been in those services that go on for 3 or 4 hours while we have every member, every participant in communion speak to their brothers and sisters. Another piece that's always or almost always in conjunction with our communion services is a foot washing service, where we take the example of Jesus at the Last Supper when he washed his disciples' feet, and we wash each other's feet. There's a couple of ways that it can be structured, but usually each member of the church who is present for communion will be paired up with another member of the church and exchange feet washing in basins with water. I don't think the Hutterites do feet washing, if I remember correctly, but I think most other Anabaptist groups do practice it.
Yeah, I don't know the details. I know that, you know, when the Swiss Anabaptists came to America, that the Amish did and the Mennonites didn't, the Swiss Brethren Mennonites. But they picked it up from the Amish in the U.S. I don't know about other streams of Anabaptists. They also picked up from the Anabaptists having communion twice a year instead of once a year, which had become a practice in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the historical answer is to how communion became an annual thing among, you know, a lot of Anabaptists. Yeah, there's some stuff. You can find a little bit if you look at Mennonite Encyclopedia articles and so on. But I have not been able to personally locate a lot of documentation on that. I know that there's a congregational order that talks about a little bit about how a congregation would function from the time of the Schleitheim Confession. And that talks about the Lord's Supper as often as the brothers are together as a regular part of their gathering, along with, some version of the love feast, supposed to serve a simple soup, not any extravagant food. So that was very early on in the Swiss tradition. But yeah, then what we find later is a annual observance, and I don't know the roots of that. I have found it interesting that in the Reformation time, and this surprised me, many Catholics were not taking the Lord's Supper regularly, and there were actually Protestants, advocating for much greater frequency. Which, of course, is surprising from a modern perspective, because now if we think of a Catholic service, we think of, Mass as at the center of a service, which, I mean, I would understand that as the historic pattern that, communion is part of a regular Lord's Day service, but that is not what has come down to us in the Anabaptist tradition.
When I quoted the passage from the Vanken story, I pointed out that there wasn't much theology articulated there as much as a clear resistance to whatever the Catholics or the Protestants believed. Pilgrim Marpeck was an early participant in the Anabaptist movement, and I think he had some better and more helpful detail in what he thought the Eucharist is about. Gameo has a good article on communion and Anabaptist history, and they talk about Pilgrim Marpeck. So I want to read a paragraph from their article. Marpeck insisted that until Christ returns, we have need of these external rites that serve us in that they witness to the world and to the church that we accept the order of Christ. Along with this is a sense of realism in the performance of the sacraments, baptism becoming a part of Christ's body, the Lord's Supper a testimony to the unity of Christ's body that we share. Needless to say, he rejects all sacramentarian views in that he does not see the metaphysical presence of Christ in the bread, but rather sees Christ present in the gathered church and in his preached word. Hence, the real presence is taken seriously by Marpeck, but not in a mechanical way, but rather in the experience of the participating believer.
Yeah, so I recently read a study by John Rempel, The Lord's Supper and Anabaptism, found it used at a bookstore, and it still costs more than most new books. But he goes through a study of Balthazar Hubmaier, Pilgrim Marpeck, and Dirk Phillips, just trying to, you know, go as deep as he can with how did these writers understand the Lord's Supper. And yeah, I definitely felt myself resonating the most with Marpeck from among those three. And yeah, Anabaptists have focused the most on Christ's presence in the body of believers that is communing. That has been our focus more than a lot of the other questions about the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that recommendation. We will put a link to that book in the notes for this episode.
Yeah, you can put a link to it. I don't know who's going to want to buy it. I just see that the result online from eBay is $300.
Yeah.
I thought I was paying dearly when I bought a used copy for $55.
There are six. I'm sorry, Marlon. There are six copies on Amazon starting at $42.99.
That's much better than eBay.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you want to buy the book, start with Amazon. It's cheaper there than some other places. Well, is there more you want to say about this, Marlon?
I know one thing I'll note. I did publish an essay about this on our blog called The Lord's Supper as Fellowship. And what I did there was to try to dig into 1 Corinthians 10 in particular, which is comparing the Lord's Supper to Old Testament sacrifices and to the meat offered to pagan idols, that, you know, the Corinthians were dealing with a question of, you know, what do they make of meat that was sacrificed to idols? So I will say that the passage that I think is worth digging into, there's some interesting things about it. And that's where the term communion actually comes from, is from that passage in Scripture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we will recommend that if you want to hear more about this topic, that Marlon's essay on our blog may be a helpful resource for you. And I think we'll end the episode here. So thank you for listening. And again, we want to thank you and offer our appreciation for your continued support of the work that we are doing here at Anabaptist Perspectives.